This episode is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They believe that sustainability is intrinsically linked with the concept of stewardship. 1-4 Group practices sustainability by helping farmers minimize product loss using their family of biocontrol products. Learn more at 1-4group.com.
Welcome to the Potato Field Podcast. I'm Zeke Jennings, host of the podcast and editor of Spudman Magazine. I'm excited to have a very special guest join the show today, University of Idaho potato researcher and professor Nora Olson, who just so happens to be our 2021 Spud Woman of the Year award winner. That award was created about 5 years ago to recognize, obviously, the outstanding achievements and contributions of women in the potato industry. Nora, congrats on a well-deserved honor, and I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Zeke. And of course, I really appreciate the nomination as well as the awarding of that designation of Spud Woman of the Year. So I am thrilled. I'm humbled. I'm just speechless. Let's just say that.
Yeah. And you're based out of the Kimberly, Idaho Research Center, correct?
That is correct. So I'm with the University of Idaho. I'm located at the Kimberly Research and Extension Center, located in South Central Idaho. And my position here is what they call an extension potato specialist. And so really what we do is we respond to the needs of the industry. And those may be current needs, putting out fires, answering those questions immediately, responding to field issues, samples coming in, questions on the phone calls, all of that. But then also we respond to or try to identify what are the current issues and what are some of your future issues too. And so we feel like we're right in the middle or center of everything to be able to make those responses.
And how do you go about really tracking and getting those topics? Do you really rely on like grower feedback and that kind of thing?
We do. What we are, we're very engaged with our industry. We try to be a represent the scientific and academic community within all of those areas of our industry. And so we will be at those meetings. We will be interacting with our growers industry out in the fields. We will answer phone calls. And so that's where you start to get that feedback, that conversation, that networking. So you can get an idea of, oh, we're starting to see a lot more of X, Y, or Z. Or, hey, this seems to be a common thread or a common question. Maybe we need to get some information out there, some additional education on that topic. And so that's really, it's this fluid back and forth of communication with the industry and the researchers and the extension specialists that way, so that we can put together these packages so that we have the latest information, science-based information for our industry, for our growers. And then we're getting information from them on what are they seeing. And it just helps perpetuate this cycle of being able to get advancing the potato science community.
Now, let's go back a little bit to, you know, your childhood, your upbringing. Now, you didn't actually grow up on a farm, which is so common when I talk to growers. Usually, that you know, you hear about a multi-generation farming family, but you didn't have that background. So what actually drew you to agriculture and specifically potatoes?
Yeah, great question. You know, growing up in Eastern Washington, I think you're one degree of separation from either Kevin Bacon or probably agriculture. And so my mother grew up on a farm. So it wasn't that I was too far away from that. It just so happened my family didn't. But I always was based in science, always was true to science, wanted to study science, but I knew that I needed an application to it. I needed the contribution, the direct contribution, primarily because I like dealing with people. I like solving problems. I like being in kind of the front lines of helping that. And so really, I was able to then go to Washington State University, where they have a fabulous graduate school program in horticulture, but specifically a great program in potatoes. And I was fortunate. I worked with Bob Thornton, Larry Hiller, some of the greatest in terms of doing potato research and extension. And that really got me involved much more in potatoes. But what was interesting, parallel to this, my brother decided to start farming. And so as I was going on the research science track for potatoes, he was going on, hey, I'm going to start growing specialty potatoes. So this was about 30 years ago. And so we were able to learn together what was happening. And it really helped fuel me in terms of how I was going to put together my ability to either do the science and convey it to the industry by working with my brother, because I could be hands-on with him. I would make recommendations to him, and he would laugh, and he'd be like, okay, with what people, with what money, and with what equipment am I going to do that? And so it helped me put things into perspective and taught me from a very early on that, hey, not everything is textbook. Not everything goes perfectly like we want to. We have to be able to pivot. We have to be able to respond. But how do we use the science that we have to make those adjustments? Or what do we need to research and do differently to be able to respond in the future to it?
You sure you're still talking about potato growing? I think you're talking about a pandemic now.
Exactly. Absolutely. I know all those words that we can now use: pivot, resilience, all of that. I think Absolutely we can easily overlay it onto the potato industry.
So, and going back to the start of your career, which you've already touched on, whether you were still in school or out of school, what were some of those early projects that you worked on, and how did some of those kind of put you on a track to what you would do later in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. Good question again. You know, the first project I ever worked on as a graduate student was for an internal brown spot, a quality issue in potatoes. And so I think that really probably has set my career in this quest for how do we do anything that's going to help maintain or increase quality of potatoes. And so I looked at calcium fertility and environmental stresses. And I think, again, that helped formulate really my path of what I wanted to do as I move forward with potatoes. So really then moved on to seed performance and seed quality. And it just kind of is a snowball from there, anything that has to do with quality. But I really enjoyed those initial projects. I also had the opportunity, as I already mentioned, working with Bob Thornton, who was an incredible potato extension specialist out of Washington State University. So I had the opportunity for him to show us some of the samples, explain to us some of the things that he was seeing out in the fields, the feedback he was getting from the industry and growers. And he relayed that to us as graduate students. And so we got to see firsthand, what are some of the real life issues out there? And that really opened up my eyes again on where I wanted to go in terms of my future career. And that would be so beneficial to helping explain what happened, come up with a solution, and so that everybody can just keep moving forward.
And you've kind of hung your hat on, at least in recent years, really being at the forefront of storage research and the quality. What gravitated you toward storage? Was it just a natural progression of that, the kind of final stage of maintaining that quality?
Yeah, that's another great question. Some of that has to be that. Yep. That really Addy Waxman recently said, hey, we have to put it in a different perspective. We actually store these potatoes longer than they're out in the field. And so it is a huge component of our industry. And how are we going to maintain that quality and make sure that we have potatoes year round? And so absolutely, I think that is a natural direction just because of the quality aspect. But we're also very fortunate at the University of Idaho, we have a potato research storage facility. And it has been here about 30 years now. And so it's a natural to be able to use that facility to do some of the storage research that needs to be done for not only for Idaho, but for the region, for the US, and then globally. And that was probably the greatest reason why I have so much of my research emphasis on storage.
You mentioned your tiles, your focus to the global potato industry beyond just Idaho or even the US. You've been widely involved with the Potato Association of America. You actually were the first woman to serve as president, I believe, would have been about 2013. You're still doing a lot of work with the World Potato Congress, which is, I believe, headquartered in Ireland. And you're doing webinars from them. You've been involved in all sorts of other organizations and getting your information out there in terms of speaking at conferences. How do you balance your time, and why do you find it so important to participate in all these other organizations And I didn't even mention the work that you do with Mike Thornton on the Better Management Practices, the BMP.
Correct, exactly. You know, I think it's just because it's so important that we network and relay information and have those conversations, again, whether it's locally, regionally, or globally. And the reason for this is that we all need to push the science and the use and the benefits of potatoes globally. And we all believe strongly in potatoes. And so having those conversations is really important. Having that networking, knowing who to talk to, who's doing what research, how can we glean what they're doing and bring it over into and use into our system. And that's what we need to do. We don't need to reinvent the wheel ourselves locally. Yes, sometimes it does, but hey, let's get some ideas. And it's just that creativity that needs to continue on how we move forward. These organizations are fantastic, primarily because they allow for that networking. And that's what's really important, whether it is in the scientific community, whether it's business, whether it's combining the two, whether it's growers getting that science and that business. These are all situations where people can have those real direct conversations and get to know each other.
And you've mentioned to me before that I think you were speaking more of grower interaction, but is when you have that feedback with growers, you're like, you might have an aha moment of, hey, I hadn't thought of it. Have you noticed any of that, even a recent example of, you know, interaction with some of these global organizations where it's like, oh, they're doing that here, that might apply to something I'm doing back home?
Absolutely. And it is. It's every day, it seems like there is one of those aha moments from either a grower or from a colleague somewhere else. And in fact, just yesterday, we had a World Potato Congress webinar with Paul Horn from Australia. And he was talking about integrated pest management. And the way that he methodically outlined it out, I was like, wait a second. I think there's such usefulness in how he portrayed it and the beneficial insects and how we can move forward into IPM. It was fantastic. And there was an aha moment for sure, just even yesterday afternoon. So yes, they're almost daily, it seems like.
Yeah. And those, what's cool about those webinars that you host for them is they can be viewed at any point. Just go to the World Potato Congress website and you can view those after the fact. And they are beneficial. I've sat through numerous of them. So
do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The Proven Biocontrol 1-4 site helps increase deliverables to your shed or plant by reducing the severity and indices of bruise. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast.
Switching gears just a tad. Now you're a researcher that, you know, participates in the planting cycle, of course, just like a grower would. It's going to be planting time in Idaho really soon. What does the growing season look like for somebody in your position in comparison to like a commercial or seed grower? Are you focused on different things throughout the season as opposed to them who really they're trying to grow the healthiest, most productive crop they can, where you might be looking at different things?
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. Planting time's here. It's exciting time. A lot of the same things that they're doing out in their fields, we're doing. We just are miniaturized in a smaller little plot. And so we have the same concerns of getting tillage done and fertility out there and irrigation and herbicides and all the things that everybody else, just the logistics of growing a crop. But you're right. We have two kind of objectives out there. One is to grow the best crop we possibly can, because we want to do that to be able to bring those potatoes into storage and then do our treatments with that, because we really don't want a stress in the field to influence then how they're going to respond in storage. We want that storage response to be itself, right? And then the other part of it, we might have that we're doing actual treatments out in the field. So we may infect seed with silver or inoculate seed with silver scurf. We have a new project this year, which is way exciting, is that we have some seed and we're actually doing different treatments to try to get them to emerge out of the ground faster. And one of the treatments is actually applying smoke to them. And so I know, crazy. And that's what's fun about our job, is that we get to be creative in terms of trying to identify maybe some useful things, or hopefully useful at one point, is that to help our industry in terms of managing the crop. So we'll do all kinds of treatments like that. Sometimes they're at planting. Sometimes they're not until the middle of the season. But a lot of what we do, again, is based upon that quality and storage research. And so we are trying to grow the best crop we can.
Just in follow-up on that smoke project, what is the thought process on what that might do? And what's the science based of why that might make seed emerge faster?
I know, exactly. Yeah. And so some of it has to do with some of the plant growth hormones that the process of smoke may provide to the plant, the response that they might have to it. There may be some other compounds with it that might cause the plant to react physiologically different. And so that's the direction we're kind of going on that one. We'll see if it works. We've done some preliminary work. But again, that's where we're at in terms of just trying to, identify different ways of thinking. And that's a lot of what you have to do is glean information from other industries, other thoughts, and bring them in and say, hey, let's see if it works in the potato industry.
Very cool. So I'll be interested to hear what the results of that one is. On that note, do you have any favorite or especially, you know, gratifying project that come to mind?
I would say there's almost about, well, there's so many of them that were so beneficial to the industry, gratifying in so many ways, because we felt like we moved forward, we moved the dial, and that's where we're getting. We're trying to do that. But I would say a few of the highlights have been looking at the alternative sprout inhibitors to CIPC. Mm-hmm. We worked on that for many, many years, whether it was clove oil, mint oil, smart block, and just looking at two, how do we put programs together? Maybe reduce our CIPC inputs so that we can add in some of these other alternatives. And that was really beneficial in many ways. One, you got to integrate and collaborate with a lot of people. Again, there was no bad ideas when it starts coming to, hey, what are we going to do? What kind of solutions can we put together in case we have to start moving towards a CIPC-free or CIPC-reduced programs? And I think that was very gratifying because you have to answer so many questions about it. Hey, is there going to be any corrosion issues with these sprout inhibitors? Are there going to be any taste or fry color issues? Again, getting back to the quality, how should they be applied? What temperature? You get to go through this litany or this long list of questions. And so it can be very rewarding in terms of coming together with a package on, hey, I think this is how it's going to work in the industry. So that was very, very, we're very pleased with that project. It was probably about a close to 20-year project, though. But we had a lot of different solutions come about in that time period. We also feel that, hey, we have some programs available, and as we move forward to potentially having, you know, reducing CIPC. And so we're not going to be caught off guard. At least we have some tools in our toolbox, let's just say. The other project I really enjoyed working on were the post-harvest use of phosphorus acid phosphites. Mm-hmm. And that was because they had not been used in that post-harvest program yet. We worked collaboratively with so many researchers, Jeff Miller Research. Even to this day, we continue to work on that, using those. And that was really beneficial because we were able to identify rates. And again, going through the whole category of how are we going to make this work? How do we answer the questions that the industry are going to have in order to put this in as a tool in our toolbox? And that was very rewarding. And then, of course, just recently working on brews, working with Mike Thornton, working with the industry, working with so many people who had a vested interest in it. And that was very rewarding because we feel like we were able, again, to move the dial to help our industry reduce brews, or at least have some tools again to come up with some solutions for themselves.
Yeah, I remember reading your article on that. What were some of the takeaways on the brews project that you guys felt that you were able to learn maybe that you didn't know before?
Yeah, you know, so the brews, it's just this, it's so complex. I mean, we always knew it was complex. It's always been an issue in the industry, and it continues to plague us. They're just going to be sensitive to bruise. But I think some of it is looking at how early can you identify a bruise? And this is a tool, again, for a grower on the fly. No longer do you need to wait 24 hours to look at what happened to your potatoes and if you have bruise or not. Hey, you can get some good information in just a few hours on whether you're having a bruising issue at certain parts of your equipment. You can make those adjustments, those modifications, and then hopefully reduce your bruise and then keep moving forward. And so that was it. We're, again, I keep maybe talking about these tools in the toolbox, but that's what we're really trying to provide is what can I do to help you as a grower or in the industry to make these modifications or changes. And that was really important. And I think also too, looking to see when does bruise occur? Are we going to see major changes in storage? And I think, again, it helps you kind of decide where is the point of contact? Where is the greatest concern? Where do we need to put all of our emphasis or a lot of our emphasis in ensuring that we are bruise free at a certain time? And I think, again, that was a great part of that project as well.
And the CIPC project that you mentioned, that's really timely as we talk about it today, because what was it last year, the EU, you know, made a decision to go ahead and not renew that for their industry, which is going to have a major effect there. That it doesn't necessarily affect the U.S. industry yet, because our EPA renewed that recently for 15 years. However, where it could affect us is if other nations that we export to decide they want to follow EU standards and our exporters can't use CIPC anymore. So that's from a regulation standpoint, we're keeping an eye on that in the industry. Since you worked on that project, has there been any developments on CIPC that you think maybe we need to revisit that topic? And would you be interested in doing another CIPC research project?
Yes, you know, it is. We're going to watch a lot of what happens in Europe unfold and where, what kind of solutions do they come up with and what kind of things can we glean and bring over here? And again, start to regenerate that research project to make sure that we have options and solutions in place as we potentially move forward to a life without CIPC in the future. Again, as you mentioned, it's not happening anytime soon due to at least regulation. And so that's an important kind of criteria, but we don't want to be caught off guard and we want to be proactive, not reactive, obviously. And so yes, should we be continuing to look at alternative sprout inhibitors, alternative or solutions and programs put together? Yes, I think we should be revisiting that because I think there's some new products out there or new potential or new way of thinking of using our sprout inhibition products or suppression. So yes, I think that's a great direction. We are very pleased that we have an endowed professorship now that is currently hopefully about to be filled at the University of Idaho located at Kimberly. And it is a potato post-harvest position. And so I think that's gonna be a natural research direction for this person to go into to look at all these alternatives and look at this future direction of what does it look like with or without CIPC.
Oh, awesome. I actually was not aware of that. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I'll check that out and please keep me posted on that news.
I will. I think we will be very excited to have this person on board and that they can direct a lot of their research efforts into all these different other post-harvest questions that we have. We have an incredible facility here at Kimberly. And we have options to be able to use that. And so this person come in and again, be creative, listen to the industry. What are the concerns now? What are the concerns in the future? How can we respond? How we can put some solutions together and keep driving, moving forward.
And we've touched on some of this already of things that, or that how you use grower feedback and things that you see to drive your research. What are some of your goals moving forward? What are some topics gaining space on that radar of yours? And what do you want to dive into next?
Yeah, that's always the good question. Too many tangents. Zeke, obviously for us, we might go off in this direction when you have too many, we have questions of this, or somebody's mentioned one little thing and you try to answer those. And when you see the gaps and the holes of where do we have information? When somebody calls me up and needs good sound science, and if there's a gap in that, then I realize somebody needs to fill that gap, whether it's us or one of our fellow researchers, and you get that information out to them. So some of what's on our radar is we are involved in this new SCRI grant that was funded to look at potato viruses, in particular potato mop top virus, as well as PBY, and two viruses that obviously plague us and need to be addressed in a multifaceted way. And so our part will be to look at enhancing sprouting for direct tuber testing. And so we're quite excited to be part of this collaborative research, that we can be the part of, hey, we spent all those years trying to suppress sprouting. Now we're actually trying to get them to sprout. And so a little bit different mindset, but definitely in our wheelhouse in terms of what kind of research we like to do at our storage research facility. So yeah, I'll continue to probably work on that. I would say on our radar screen is potato mop top virus. And you've heard it. You've heard it from others. It's one that we need to address. And again, a multi approach. We have the vector of the powdery scab vector, and we have the virus itself. And how do we answer some of those questions? How do we manage both of those diseases, really? And so that will be a major influence in terms, or major area where we can fit in. Not being a pathologist, we let the pathologist handle the actual disease parts, but we can at least help in terms of some of the physiology or the agronomic response to it.
And we've covered a lot of your research and career, but away from work, what do you enjoy doing? What's what makes you smile away from the lab?
Oh yeah, great questions. Well, yeah, I'll always smile when I talk about my family, of course. Very proud of them at all times. Yeah, and my dogs. Dogs, family. I have two girls. One is in high school, one is in college. My husband's a farmer. So again, going back to that question about farming and how do I relate things, sometimes I'll ask him questions. And how do you like to receive kind of information? How do you want to read about X, Y, or Z? And so I try to get that feedback even from him. And so I really appreciate, obviously, the family a lot. And so, yep, then my dogs, gardening, being outside, of course, anything being outside, that's a natural. And hiking, skiing, enjoying the great Idaho outdoors.
And what's your husband say when you ask him that question? Because I would be interested in hearing that.
I know it is. In terms of, oh, you know, yeah, actually you would be. I asked him, I said, hey, what do you think about magazine articles? He actually likes that. Primarily because if he does have, he always has to eat lunch. And if he has 15 minutes during the day to sit down and eat his lunch, he'll flip through a magazine about, you know, his crop or whatever. And so that has made me realize that that is a great format for us to put information into. And I think it brings up to all of our different ways of learning preference. And we all want to hear it in different formats, because I may like to hear it in a webinar or a podcast, or somebody might want to read it. And we have to disseminate our information in those multiple formats in order to reach everybody. And so we really appreciate Spudman Magazine being one of those formats, and actually your multiple formats. You're online, you are doing podcasts, you're doing webinars, and you're doing the print version. And so you're capturing a lot of what we would intend our audience to be, and helping us get that information out, because that's really what we all need to do.
Yeah, and that topic is pertinent, because, you know, we're trying to figure that out too, of how do we best reach our readers? How do they want to be reached? So, yeah, there's a real balancing act there. So I can absolutely appreciate that concern on your radar, because ultimately your research, you can have all the great information in the world. If it's not being applied, you're not reaching people. it's kind of moot, and you're really excellent at that part of the engagement and getting yourself out there and being accessible. So I think that's probably why everybody knows Nora Olson. Again, we're really thrilled that you're our SWUD Woman of the Year, very well deserved. And one final fun question, what is your favorite way to eat potatoes?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, I like potatoes in every format. But if I had to pick one way, I would say roasting. It's really an ode to the potato and its versatility, because I love that I can roast a potato. I can cut it up into all different types of shapes. You know, lengthwise, now they're French fries. You know, diagonally, they are wedges. I can make chips out of it that way. And so I can see the versatility of the potato just by cutting it into different formats, but roasting it all the same. So
great way to end the podcast. Nora, thanks so much for coming on. You are just a data bank of information, and encourage anybody who's not familiar with your research to check you out at uidaho.edu and read up on her papers and her research. It's tremendous amount of great information. Thank you for all your contributions to the industry, Nora, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Zeke. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to 1-4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at 1-4group.com. We'll see you next time.